Hello and welcome to Spectrum Iran. Tonight's show is on U.S. Embassy takeover anniversary and recent U.S. spying scandals. Stay with us. Welcome back. As in previous years, Iranians from all walks of life held nationwide rallies to mark the historic takeover of the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran. November 4th, known as the Student Day in Iran, marks the day of the fight against global arrogance. On such a day in 1979, a group of Iranian Revolutionary University students took over the U.S. Embassy, which they believed had turned into a den of espionage that aimed to overthrow the nascent Islamic Republic establishment. Referring to the 1979 takeover, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said on Sunday that Iranian youth were more than three decades ahead of their time when they called the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran the den of espionage. The leader said, "On that day, our youth named the U.S. Embassy the den of espionage, and today, after over three decades, U.S. embassies in the European countries which are American allies are called nests of espionage." The revelation comes as Washington has been embarrassed by the disclosure that it had monitored phone calls and texts of at least 35 world leaders, including that of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Revelations of massive spying operations by the U.S. have triggered condemnations across Europe, Latin America, China, and Southeast Asia. Well, to help us with this show focusing on the U.S. takeover, anniversary, embassy takeover anniversary, and the recent U.S. spying scandals, we have the pleasure of being joined by two analysts. In the studio, we have Fuad Izzadi, Professor of Political Communications at University of Tehran. Professor Izzadi, thank you for coming on the program, sir.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And joining us via Skype is Professor Hushang Hassanyari, Professor of International Relations and Political Science at Royal Military College of Canada, Ontario. Professor Hassanyari, thank you for taking part, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get into our discussion proper, let's take a listen to our narration about the U.S. Embassy takeover. Stay with us. Is marking this year's National Day Against Global Arrogance, an Iranian tradition since the victory of the Islamic Revolution were held across the Islamic Republic of Iran on Monday. Iranians from all walks of life participated in nationwide rallies to mark the 34th anniversary of the 1979 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, dubbed the Den of Espionage. On November 4, 1979, a group of revolutionary Iranian university students took over the U.S. embassy, which they believe had turned into a den of espionage which aimed to overthrow the nascent Islamic Republic establishment. Documents found at the compound later corroborated claims by revolutionary students that the U.S. was using its Tehran embassy to hatch plots to overthrow the new Islamic establishment of Iran. Founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, later hailed the effort as a second revolution with a greater significance. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Professor Izadi, without further ado, sir, when the Muslim revolutionary students took over the U.S. embassy, dubbed as a den of espionage, 34 years ago, they hardly thought that this would actually turn into an Iranian tradition for millions across the country to participate on annual basis. Why this strong sentiment, why this strong feeling, spirit of anti-imperialism 3 decades after the events, sir?
Well, you're right in that sense that when the students took over the embassy, they did not expect to stay there that long to start with. As you know, we had a couple of incidents prior to November 4th, 1979, where when you had embassy taken over or attacked by groups of people, and then Iranian security forces would sort of push them back and not allow them to do that. This time, the students managed to take over the embassy, and they had done this after the United States allowed the deposed Shah into the United States. And the fear that the students had, and a lot of people in Iran had, was that the scenario that the United States orchestrated in 1953 with the coup d'etat is going to repeat, meaning that with the Shah inside the United States, there's going to be another plan to get him back to Iran the same way they did in 1953. So given that history of United States and Iran, a lot of people were worried that the same embassy could do the same thing that they did some years before. So what happened was that the students took over the embassy, and the Iranian government did not oppose the act. In fact, as you said, Imam Khomeini called that a second revolution, meaning that the first revolution was designed to get rid of the Shah's government.
That's right.
And the second revolution was designed to free Iran from the United States. And as you remember, after the coup d'etat, this very embassy was basically running Iran in terms of dictating to Shah what to do, appointing ministers, prime ministers, and having a lot of
policies,
different policies, had a lot of influence with regard to how the country was run. And given that interference, given the fact that the CIA trained Shah's secret service, the SAVAK, given the fact that the Americans had a good control of the Iranian economy, and given the fact that they were plundering Iranian oil after the coup d'etat, you had this level of sentiments against the United States. And then in the years after the takeover, you had the United States basically trying to overthrow the new Iranian government. You had the United States supporting Saddam's government during the war. And then after that, you had instances like shooting down of
the Iran
Iranian
Airbus.
Airliner. And then after that, you had different types of sanctions. So what the United States government managed to do was to remind the Iranians every year that they are hurting the Iranian people, and that may explain the reason why this ceremony that's taken on November 4th is repeated every year with a large population coming in, because it's the source of the problem, the United States, never stopped hurting Iranian people. They have been increasing pressure on Iran with different types of sanctions in more recent years. So a new generation of Iranians have learned that the U.S. government is up to no good, and because of that mentality, this opposition to U.S. policies has continued.
Thank you. Professor Hassan Yari in Canada, sir, What's your take on this anti-imperialist sentiment in view of the fact that there is, in a sense, a warming up of relations between Tehran and Washington? Although this wall of mistrust still exists after talks between Iran and the 5+1, we've had President Obama saying all options are still on the table. We've had U.S. officials saying that there is relieving sanctions is at the end of the discussions, and there is no approach or opinion to ease the sanctions initially. So, what's your take on the rallies in Iran in view in that context, sir?
I think this is now part of the revolutionary tradition in Iran. It seems that, as you indicated, the mistrust continues to exist in Iran, and also we should say in the U.S. and in some other countries vis-a-vis Iran. What's important really to talk about, I believe, at this point is the fact that now with the new government in Iran and new ideas that the Iranians put forward to the international community in regards to solving this nuclear impasse, I think there is a kind of optimism that exists now in many, many countries outside of Iran, despite the fact that you indicated what President Obama said or other leaders of 5+1 mentioned about Iran and its nuclear program. But I think the fact that the Americans, like others, they are extremely pleased with the new approach of Iran to this issue, putting forward new ideas and the way to get out of this this cul-de-sac is very positive. And I think there is a need, really, to build up on this approach in order to finally solve the nuclear problem, but also through that to start a new kind of relationship between Iran and the international community. The fact that those sanctions are imposed on Iran, they create a lot of problems, obviously, for the Iranian population, Iran in general. Despite the refusal of leaders in some countries, part of 5+1, that they have to continue with the sanction and so forth. But if you look at the closer at the situation in the U.S., we realize that the Obama administration is working extremely hard to convince the American Congress not to impose new sanctions on Iran, because for the Obama administration, we have to give a chance to the negotiations. Since the Iranians are more than willing to participate constructively to the negotiations, I think this helps really the American administration inside of the U.S. To pursue its policy toward Iran and convince the very harsh liners in the U.S. Congress, especially in the Senate, not to put forward new sanctions against Iran. So in that sense, and despite the fact that we are talking about more than three decades of hostilities between the two countries, it seems that there is a new atmosphere, and I think both Iran, U.S. and others would be very wise to take advantage of this situation in order to create a new political environment in which countries collaborate instead of confronting each other.
Thank you, Professor Hassan Yari. Professor Izzadi, how far do you share Dr. Hassan Yari's optimism? And also, I'd like your views on comments made by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, referring to the fact that what the Iranian students did over three decades 34 years ago exactly, is actually being repeated in a sense, the embarrassment, the scandals, the US spying scandals by the recent revelations that the US is spying on its closest allies, Germany, France, and so forth. And the US embassies are actually den of espionage and centers for eavesdropping and so forth.
I think with regard to Iran, US relations, the new approach of the government of Dr. Rouhani will, at the end, create a win-win situation for Iran, meaning that if the negotiations are successful, then they should lead to lessening of sanctions, and that is good for Iranian people. And if the results are not successful, if the US government and a number of European governments that are causing difficulties for Iran continue this wrong policy toward Iran, then the new generation of Iranians who were not around in 1979 will see that a new government in Iran has come to power, has spoken softly toward the other side, has been willing to negotiate with good intentions with the other side, has been willing to be flexible on many issues when it comes to Iran's nuclear program. And if the other side doesn't take this opportunity, then the new generation of Iranians, the younger people in Iran, will become as anti-American as the older generation that created the 1979 revolution. The reason the embassy was taken over, the reason Iranian people developed these anti-American sentiments was because of wrong policies of the United States during the Shah's government that resulted in negative opinion about the United States. But 34 years has passed, and the new generation has not been around during the Shah's time, has not seen American misbehavior inside Iran. Now they see this relation is not in a good shape, and they see the Iranian government is doing its utmost to basically resolve this problem. And if this problem is not resolved, then this new generation will develop the same mentality as the older generation when it comes to the United States. So whether the talks and negotiations are successful, or if they are not successful, in either case, I think Iran will benefit. With regard to the issue of spying, we have a situation where the United States does not see any limit on eavesdropping, on monitoring, on spying, not only inside the United States, but internationally.
That's right.
And because of that fact, you have seen in the last few weeks, the closest allies of the United States in Europe have been quite angry with this behavior of the United States. I was watching an interview with German Foreign Minister on CNN a couple of nights ago, and what the German foreign minister was saying is that the U.S. claims to engage in these type of activities to fight terrorism.
That's right.
And if that is the case, why are they monitoring German chancellor's telephone?
Good question.
And so this is the question that he was raising. And I add this sentence to it, that either German chancellor is engaging in terrorist activities, which needs to be monitored, or they are just wondering what she is saying privately on matters that are private to her. Maybe she's talking to her husband about some private issue. So it's quite embarrassing for a country like the United States that claims to respect privacy, human rights, rule of law, to basically violate every rule of law that exists internationally and basically violate all sense of privacy. And they had, they did this in Germany and other countries using their embassy in these countries. And as you know, under international law, embassies are immune and diplomats are immune, but they're immune because they're supposed to do diplomatic work. Diplomats are not supposed to engage in espionage activities.
That's right. Engage in diplomatic efforts and
exactly.
diplomatic work.
The reason they have political immunity is because of the political work, not espionage work. And what a lot of people in Europe and elsewhere are calling U.S. embassies or den of spies or centers of spies. And this terminology, interestingly, is coming on the 34th anniversary of the takeover of the embassy in Tehran using the same slogan. So it is, I think, true that what Iranians said 34 years ago is being repeated now by Europeans, which opposed the takeover of the embassy at that time. If the European countries were not so negative toward that takeover, if they had thought about the reasons behind that takeover, maybe now they would not be in the same situation.
Thank you. Before we go to Ontario to get Sassan Yari's views on the U.S. Spying scandal, recent ones, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Professor Hushang Hassanyari, sir, some of US's allies and friends are puzzled, mystified, angered, as it were, when they've realized the extent of NSA spying on their own leaders. Your comments, sir, in view of the fact that you're a professor of international relations and political science, on the extent of this US spying?
I think it's unacceptable, obviously, what the Americans are doing, did and they are doing. Saying that, we also have to recognize that all this information was published by an American,
right.
Snowden. So it means that in the U.S. there are millions of people who do not necessarily share the evaluation of their own government, of the international relations, the policy outside the U.S. and so forth. I have to remind ourselves really that since September 11, there is a kind of siege mentality that exists in the U.S. And they are extremely worried about the next step and the next act of the terrorist groups, saying that the spying on ordinary people in Spain, for example, the 30 million, I believe they were spied on. You mentioned the case of Angela Merkel and other leaders in the world, Brazil and so forth. This is obviously is not expected really from the Americans who have to be a good citizen of the world. So in other words, despite the fact that, yes, September 11 happened in the U.S., all the consequences of that we no, and so forth, but none of those really should justify what the, this American agency is doing. And I think the American administration now, under the pressure of Europeans and also public opinion and many, many newspapers in the U.S. Came to the conclusion that they have really to say something in order to lessen the pressure. This is why President Bush and then Secretary of State John Kerry mentioned a few times that they have to review why the what the NSA done in order to correct the situation. So in other words, implicitly they recognize the mistake that was done, and consequently the expectation is that they are not going to repeat that. But again, as we know very well, all the embassies, regardless of the origin of them, the ideology of the country and so forth, in one way or the other, they participate in spying or on if they are interested in industry. This is why they talk about industrial spying. Sometimes the embassies in foreign countries, they are spying on their own citizens established in those countries and so forth. So there is a need really for the international community to come together to review the practice of the embassies in order to establish very clear rules. But I'm afraid that despite all the discussions that go on and all the criticism we will see in the future, other embassies, including obviously the American embassies, will continue to do the same, although not necessarily at the level and extent that we see, but it's some way. The most important really question here is, in my view, that the governments, they have really to strike a balance between the requirements of the security and also the rights of the people, including the heads of state. So in that sense, we are talking about a very delicate really balance that needs to be established. And if it's not, obviously it's going to create a lot of tensions between the different countries. We know that, for example, now some European countries with some third world countries, including Brazil, I believe they are preparing a text to put to the Security Council denouncing what the American administration, American government did in regards to spying on the heads of state. So in that sense, it would be extremely embarrassing, obviously, for the American administration to continue to do that, especially when we talk about very close allies to the U.S.
Thank you. Professor Izadi, earlier said you gave us your opinion that as far as you're concerned with the new government in Iran, the government administration of President Rouhani, and the softer tone, the softer approach as it were adopted by this administration, you think that whatever happens, either way Iran stands to gain by the talks between Iran and the G5 plus one. What do you consider as being the most prudent course of action to take at this juncture by the Iranian officials?
I think they should continue the talks, but also keep in mind that we have powerful centers of power inside the United States that oppose these talks. We have the Israeli lobby and the people associated with the Israeli lobby inside the United States Congress that really do not like to see these type of activities that the Obama administration is engaging in. Mm-hmm. And we have some people inside the Obama administration that are not really ready to recognize Iranians' rights.
That's right.
So because of the fact that these centers of power are there, I think the Iranian diplomats should continue engaging with the other side, but not be overly optimistic about the results,
mm-hmm.
Given the fact that, you know, in recent years, whenever a sanctions law was presented, for example, to the U.S. Senate, you normally got 100 to 0 in favor of sanctions, or mm-hmm. 99 to 0 if somebody was absent. So if you want to basically get rid of these sanctions, you need to have a situation where you have a vote of 51-49 against the sanctions. That's and to get from zero to 51, it's not going to be that easy. I think Iranian diplomats should pay attention to the issue of public diplomacy, letting the American people know about the real Iran, about the real issues with regard to Iran's nuclear program, will create an atmosphere where the elected officials in the United States cannot continue with the same line of pressure when their voters know that they are pursuing a wrong policy. Unfortunately, the United States government has managed to block Iranian media outlets that are supposed to basically present the facts about Iran's nuclear program. We had channels like Press TV that was blocked. I think Sahar was not even allowed in the United States to start with, so they did not need to block it because it was never there. So I think we need to use the public opinion inside the United States to pressure the American officials to change course. You saw what happened in Syria. About 65% of Americans opposed the war in Syria.
That's right.
Because it was clear to them that what the U.S. government was doing was not in line with U.S. interests and American interests. It might have been good for Israel. It might have been good for Saudi foreign policy, but not for the United States. The same thing needs to happen with regard to Iran. And so that's going to take a lot of effort. Iranian government officials need to go and think about how they can establish centers of power within the United States. Unfortunately, the U.S. government works like a corporation where you have to invest and then get the benefits from that investment. The fact that money is so much part of the American political system and lobbying is so much part of the American system, it's difficult to imagine that the U.S. policy toward Iran will change without engaging in these type of activities. So that's a long-term process, and I don't think we are going to see any real change in U.S. behavior toward Iran in the near future. Iranian government needs to work on that in the long run. And unfortunately, based on theories of U.S. foreign policy, the U.S. government looks at other countries either as clients or enemies. And since we had a revolution here, Iran is not going to be a client state of the United States. So it's going to be an enemy based on the opinion that they have. And so they need to change that look.
Thank you. Professor Hassan Yari, we're quickly running out of time. Briefly, if you would, sir, why are certain countries doing their best, doing their utmost to sabotage this thawing of relations, as it were, between Tehran and Washington, sir?
I think two groups really are opposed to any kind of easing relations between the two countries. The first one is, for example, if you look at the situation inside of Iran, as you know, and this is really publicly known, that there are individuals and groups who oppose to that for a number of reasons, including they don't want really to see the current government to succeed, despite the fact that Dr. Rouhani and Dr. Zarif did a very, very good job during the visit in New York. You have the same kind of people, groups in the U.S. Who are basically doing the same thing. They try to sabotage whatever the Obama administration is doing in regards to relationship between Iran, including the question of nuclear. And then you have some states. Dr. Izadi mentioned some countries in the region. Obviously, the Saudis are not happy about this kind of warming relations between Iran and the U.S. because they believe that if that happens, they will be neglected, and consequently, Iran is going to impose a hegemony on the region and so forth. The same thing for the Israelis and some other smaller countries. So what is important, and I think that Dr. Izadi indicated that, is really the public diplomacy. The Iranians need really to be more active in the U.S. For example, the fact that Dr. Rouhani published an article in one of the important newspapers in the U.S. had a very, very positive effect. Dr. Zarif did it many years ago when he was in the U.S. Iran needs really to do the same thing in the region with the countries in the neighborhood in order to let them know that Iran is not a threat. There is not such a thing as the zero-sum game, Iran gaining, they are losing, and so forth. So there is a need to make it clear to those countries that it's beneficiary to all of us to lessen the pressure and lessen the tensions in bilateral and multilateral relationship in order to create a conducive really environment for economic development, more regional cooperation, and so forth. So I think now the context is right. And so I'm cautiously optimistic to see that with the work that the Iranian delegation is doing and the good faith coming from the 5+1, we can really get to something positive in order to put an end to the decades of hostility between the those countries and Iran, and also Iran and the region.
Thank you, Fasal Sanyari. Dr. Izadi, in 2 minutes, Iran has been good at holding its ground. We have the next round of Iran and P5+1 talks in Geneva on November 7th and 8th. How do you envisage the course of discussion evolving? Is it going to be as fruitful as the last round we had in Geneva?
It's going to be more difficult as we go on, because in the initial stages of talks, people talk about general ideas. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to agree on general ideas. It becomes more difficult when you look at the footprint and you look at the details. Actually, in the next round of talks, and maybe the one after that, we will see if the American government is really serious about engaging Iran, or are they using this as some sort of way of getting a benefit from the new government, getting things from the new government that they could not get from the previous government. We will see this in the next round of talks and in the near future. I think as people in Iran, we hope that the new team of Iran, the people who are engaging with the other side, are successful. But I think the other side needs to know that the diplomats that are going to go to Geneva are experienced diplomats, and if they really want to change their policy toward Iran, they need to do it in a proper way. There is no way of going around the people who are there, and I think if they realize that, we'll see better results.
Thank you. Well, on that note, we've come to the end of this edition of Spectrum Iran. Special thanks to both our guests for their time and input. We had the pleasure of being joined via Skype by Professor Hushang Hassanyari, Professor of International Relations and Political Science at Royal Military College of Canada, Ontario. Dr. Hassanyari, thank you for having taken part in our program, sir.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And in Tehran, we were joined by Fuad Izadi, Professor of Political Communications at University of Tehran. Dr. Izadi, thank you for your participation, sir.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this edition. I'd like to thank our viewers for staying tuned. Goodbye and God bless.